And now, it's time for our weekly news round. Lutheran Radio News with Paul Hill.
Bones attributed to St. Peter have been found by chance in a church in Rome during routine restoration work 2,000 years after the apostle's death. The relics of the saint were found in clay pots in the 1,000-year-old church of Santa Maria in Capella in the district of Trastevere, a medieval warren of cobbled lanes on the banks of the Tiber River. The bones were discovered when a worker lifted up a large marble slab near the medieval altar of the church, which has been closed to the public for 35 years because of structural problems. He came across two Roman-era pots with inscriptions on their lids, indicating that inside were not only bone fragments from St. Peter, but also three early popes, Cornelius, Calixtus, and Felix, as well as four early Christian martyrs. The workmen immediately notified the deacon of the church, Massimiliano Floridi, that there were two clay pots which were inscripted with the names of early popes, Peter, Felix, Calixtus, and Cornelius. "I'm not an archaeologist, but I understand immediately that they were very old," he told Ray Uno, an Italian television channel. "Looking at them, I felt very emotional." It had been known for centuries that the relics might exist. They are recorded on a stone inscription in the church, which claimed they were kept alongside a fragment of a dress worn by the Blessed Virgin. But until now, the relics had never been found. The remains have been handed to the Vatican for further study. Without proper analysis, it is impossible to say whether they belong to St. Peter. "We're waiting for a detailed study to be undertaken," said the deacon. "A DNA comparison between these bones and those kept by the Vatican would shed light on the issue." A Vatican spokesman said it was too early to comment on the discovery. It is not yet known how or why the relics came to be interred in the church of Santa Maria in Capella, which was consecrated in 1090. One theory is that they were transferred there from the Vatican by Pope Urban II at a time of schism within the Catholic Church. While Urban was generally recognized as the legitimate pope, he faced a challenge from an anti-pope, Clement III, who had set up a rival power base in Rome, backed by the Holy Roman Emperor Henry IV. The church in Trastevere was closely linked to Pope Urban and may have been seen by him as a secure place in which to hide the bones. Conventional wisdom has it that St. Peter was crucified upside down in Rome in the 1st century AD. His remains were interred in a tomb on Vatican Hill, where the Emperor Constantine later built a church, which in the 16th century was replaced by the current imposing basilica. During excavations under St. Peter's Basilica that began after the Second World War, archaeologists discovered a funerary monument with a casket built in honour of Peter and an engraving in Greek that read Petrus Eni, or Peter is here. The remains were forensically examined in the 1960s, with experts concluding that they belonged to a man in his early 60s who lived in the 1st century AD. That was proof enough for Pope Paul VI in 1968 to declare them the bones of St. Peter. During a mass in 2013, Pope Francis publicly unveiled the bone fragments, reviving the debate over whether they really belonged to the first pope. It was the first time the 9 pieces of bone encased in a box inside a bronze display case had ever been exhibited in public. Federico Lombardi, the then Vatican spokesman, said there was a serious possibility that the bones were from St. Peter, but we don't go beyond that. Christian Solidarity Worldwide, CSW, has been informed that children from families belonging to the Church of Iran denomination in the cities of Rasht and Shiraz have been told that they must either study Shia Islam or leave school. The majority of these children are second-generation Christians. As part of a minority faith community recognized in the Iranian constitution, they are allowed, by law, to have access to religious instruction designed by members of the Christian community and approved by the Ministry of Education. Until recently, their families were able to present a signed letter from the denomination that exempted them from studying Shia Islam. However, the authorities are now rejecting this letter on the grounds that the church is an illegal organization and are insisting the children either agree to study Islam or go home. Sources in the denomination have told CSW that the message is clear: convert or leave. Under Article 30 of the Iranian Constitution, the government is obligated to provide free education for all children until they complete secondary school. However, the policy adopted by school authorities in Rashton Shires effectively deprives children who are currently in primary and secondary school of education unless they agree to religious instruction that does not conform with their own faith. Iran is party to the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, the ICCPR, which recognizes the rights of parents to ensure the religious and moral education of their children in line with their own convictions, and has ratified the International Covenant on Economic, Social and Cultural Rights, the ICESCR, which also recognizes this right. The country has also ratified the United Nations Conventions on the Rights of the Child, CRC, which commits signatories to ensuring access to primary, secondary and tertiary education. CSW's Chief Executive Mervyn Thomas says it is worrying that the education of so many children will be unduly interrupted until their parents agree for them to study a religion different to their own. Education is a basic right which Iran has undertaken to guarantee to all of its citizens. Children should not be victimized in an effort to penalize their parents for exercising their right to adopt a religion of their choice. Since education is the responsibility of central government, we urge the Special Rapporteur on the Right to Education and other key international human rights experts to make urgent representations with President Rouhani with a view to ensuring the country fulfills its national and international obligations to respect the right of the child to education, and particularly to religious education commensurate with the convictions and beliefs of their parents. Chinese authorities in several provinces have banned children from attending church. In August, more than 100 churches in Zhejiang province were notified that minors would not be permitted to participate in religious activities, including Sunday school or summer camps, even if accompanying their parents. The ban on children attending church applies to state-recognized churches, which are required to be registered with the authorities and are only allowed to operate under close supervision. All the activities of believers who are part of China's flourishing house church movement are already illegal. A preacher and two members of the congregation were injured in a stabbing at a church in Birmingham after they were attacked by a man with a knife. Minister Kevin Hutchinson told the Birmingham Mail that about 150 people were taking part in the New Jerusalem Apostolic Church's Sunday service when a man with a knife stormed into our sanctuary. He said the attacker was challenged at the door by ushers and restrained. He told the paper he drew out a large kitchen knife and was restrained by a number of members, about three. Three members were injured and were taken to hospital. The men in the church were able to restrain him until the police and paramedics came. West Midlands police said a 33-year-old man was taken to hospital with non-life-threatening injuries. Officers were called to the church off Rocky Lane in the Ashton area of the city at 10:50 a.m. on Sunday. West Midlands police said 47-year-old John Delahaye had been charged with attempted murder. The force said Delahaye had been charged with two counts of wounding and possession of a bladed weapon and will appear before Birmingham Magistrates Court on Monday. In an earlier statement, police said the incident was not believed to be of terrorism, and early indications suggest that the offender and victim knew each other and that this was a targeted attack. A Christian couple taking legal action against their 6-year-old son's Church of England primary school because his male classmate was allowed to wear a dress have been branded transphobic by This Morning viewers. Nigel, 44, and Sally Rowe, 42, from the Isle of Wight, who came under fire when they announced that they had removed their son from the school, appeared on the show today to defend their decision. But This Morning host, Philip Schofield, took the pair to task on screen and suggested it was the couple who had a problem with children who identify as transgender, while insisting that other youngsters had remarkable ability to adapt to changes. Many viewers of the show tweeted their outrage over the couple's views after they insisted it was wrong for 6-year-olds to be confronted with the complex issue of transgenderism, with Mr. Rowe stating, "A child that young can't make an informed decision." Viewers watching the segment were angry at the couple's attitudes and branded them transphobic and bullying. The Rowes previously withdrew their son's 8-year-old brother from the school over a similar incident. "My blood is boiling. How dare they sit there with their prejudiced opinion about how children should think and feel," fumed one viewer. Presenters Philip and Holly Willoughby, meanwhile, were praised by viewers for their open-minded and understanding attitude towards transgender children. They both pointed out they had several guests on the show in the past who have bravely opened up about overcoming their own struggle with their identities. Philip said, "Children can adapt remarkably well. If things are explained to them, then they understand very clearly. It's not an issue with the children, it's an issue with you. You are the ones with the problem," he told the pair, after they complained it was confusing for children to understand a change in pronoun. But Mr. and Mrs. Rowe, who took action after their 6-year-old son came home confused as to why a boy was now a girl and now homeschooled both their children, claimed it was wrong for children to be allowed to identify as a gender of their choice because it was too early for them to understand. Some viewers agreed with the pair, claiming that it was their right to protect their child and take action. Mr. Rowe said, "A child that young can't make an informed decision. The statistic is that 98% of people who felt like that when they were younger turn out to be not like that at all. I do feel it could be damaging. It's a very social, complex issue. For such young children, we feel it isn't right. The reason we wanted to make a stand is that we believe a lot of parents throughout the UK would agree. We've got to think about the whole picture." Mrs. Rowe explained that she had love and compassion for any family with children coping with gender dysphoria, but repeatedly quoted a statistic from an unknown study claiming that after youngsters go through puberty, 98% of them often change their mind and they're sorted. Some viewers were in agreement with the parents, claiming they were just protecting their child and it was every bit of their business to take action. Lawyers for the company will argue in a tribunal that the school is discriminating against them by implying that their Christian faith makes them transphobic. They will also suggest the school is wrong to rely on Labour's Equality Act because legal recognition of gender reassignment only applies to people over the age of 18. The school said it is following Church of England guidance and rules laid out in the Equality Act, which encourages respect for lesbian, gay, bisexual and transgender people. Teachers are briefed on how to tackle transphobic behaviour, which includes gender inappropriate pronouns, an inability to accept a transgender person is a real male or female, and a refusal to use a transgender person's adopted name. A Church of England vicar incinerated himself with a can of petrol while being investigated for historic sex claims and inquest heard. The Reverend Martin Neal, 60, a member of the General Synod, was found dead at his rectory in the village of Hawley in Hampshire by his sister Janice Chandler on July the 25th. His body was discovered just 8 days after he was initially arrested by the Metropolitan Police regarding historic sexual offences committed 20 years ago. North East Hampshire coroner Andrew Bradley said that the allegations against Mr. Neal had clearly weighed on him, regardless of whether they were true or not. A post-mortem found his body was covered in near total third-degree burns and blackening by soot. He could only be identified by dental records. The inquest heard Miss Chandler had arranged the previous evening for Mr. McNeil to pick her up so they could spend a day with the parents. After trying to contact him during the day, she went there to find her brother at Hawley Vicarage at around 4 p.m. She said, "I have a key, so I let myself in after getting no answer on the doorbell. I went in, he wasn't there, so I had a look around. His cars were parked outside. I noticed that the back door was unlocked and the chain was dangling. I went into the garden as I turned right. I saw the petrol can. I walked further and just saw something on the ground that was burned. I was not sure at first, but I realised it was a body when I got nearer. I could see it was a body because there was a face and it was face down." Miss Chandler contacted the police who attended the scene. She said her brother would help anyone and that they were a very close family, seeing each other almost every day. Friends described Father Neal as a quietly spoken but caring priest who had worked as a vicar for Hawley in the Diocese of Guildford for 20 years. Father Neal became a member of the Church's Parliament, the General Synod, earlier this year and recently attended his first meeting in York. A prominent traditionalist, he was a council member of the pressure group Forward in Faith, which opposes women priests. Detective Constable Matt Deary of Basingstoke CID told the inquest that Mr. Neal was arrested and interviewed on July the 17th in connection with historic sexual offences. DC Deary said Mr. Neal was released without charge on unconditional bail following the interview, but said there was an ongoing investigation still underway. Ms. Chandler said her brother had not spoken about the allegations against him, but said she knew he'd been suspended by the church. A vicar who took the disabled blue badge of a dead parishioner so he could part for free has swerved a jail sentence. Father Bill Haymaker stole the badge from the woman who had died 2 months earlier and then used it in his own car. The vicar of St. Paul's Anglican Parish in Bexhill, East Sussex, was caught red-handed by a traffic warden in a disabled bay. The 64-year-old claimed he'd agreed to hand a badge of the dead woman back to the council as part of registering her death, but had simply forgotten. He later described it as one of those oh shoot moments and an honest mistake, and claimed he was telling the gospel truth. He was ordered to carry out 200 hours of unpaid work and to pay £3,700 in court costs. Haymaker, who was ordained in 1984, was prosecuted by East Sussex Council for the offence, which took place in Weston Road, Bexhill, in December 2015. The court was previously told the vicar was parking his car in a disabled bay on the busy main road in the seaside town when he was stopped and questioned by a council traffic warden. The father of two claimed to provide pastoral care for terminally ill and poorly parishioners, which includes running day-to-day errands for them and driving them to hospital and doctor appointments. But a jury took just 45 minutes to unanimously find him guilty of possessing an article for use in a fraud. After his conviction, Haymaker, who was accompanied to Hove Crown Court by his official clerical dog, the Venerable Mr. Piddles, said he had made an honest mistake. He said his actions had not been malicious and claimed the badge had been displayed in a mix-up because he had up to 7 of the permits in his glove compartment. The vicar said he had intended to display another active badge belonging to the patient he was chauffeuring at the time, but they were mixed up because they all looked very similar. Sentencing him at Hove Crown Court, Judge Christine Henson QC said, "You used the disabled blue badge that did not belong to you. You used it to commit a fraud to convince the authorities you had a legitimate parking claim." Haymaker told the court he does not officiate in a church, but works within the community carrying out funerals and errands for parishioners, for which he receives no payment. A popular figure, Haymaker also runs his own charity, Project New Life, which helps abused and neglected children in Moldova and Romania. He has raised funds through donations and travelled to both countries to help improve the lives of children living in orphanages and homes. Mark Joblin, the council's enforcement officer, said after the case, "As an ordained priest, Haymaker is someone in a position of considerable responsibility and trust who ought to set a good example for others to follow. Instead, he shamelessly used a blue badge belonging to a woman who had died and then tried to talk his way out of trouble with a series of excuses." And finally, an attempt by Penzance to beat the world record for 14,000 pirates in one place failed after a group accidentally stayed in the pub and missed the count. The Cornish town has been trying to claim the Guinness World Record for several years, having lost it to Hastings in 2013, but they will be forced to try again next year after missing out on the title by just a few on Sunday. Organisers blame the miss in part to groups of pirates who did not leave their local pub in time to be counted. Pubs in the area had promised to make sure the pirates were out and in the count area by 3:45 p.m. But Andy Hazelhurst told the crowd, "Sorry to say, we're back again next year. We fell short by a few. We won't say how many were in the pub. We won't shame those who were down in a dolphin and that, but we still haven't taught the people who go to the pub to get here on time." To succeed, they needed to have more than 14,231 pirates in one place by 4 p.m. on Sunday. To qualify, pirates have to have two accessories, such as a sword or an eye patch. Penzance first won the Guinness World Record for the largest pirate gathering in 2011 by stealing the title from Hastings. But in 2013, their southeast rivals won back the title, and Penzance decided to challenge them again a year later. That attempt was marred in controversy after Cost shows Penzance Town Council has spent £55,000 on the failed bid. Costs included spending nearly £300 on inflatable parrots, nearly £2,000 on pirate t-shirts, and £600 on pirate flags. No figures have yet been released on what the latest attempt cost. My name is Paul Hill. Thank you for listening to Lutheran Radio UK. Lutheran Radio News will be back next Friday. Until then, every blessing to you and goodbye for now.
On your PC, tablet, mobile phone and internet radio receiver, this is Lutheran Radio UK.